to Stirring the Pot. You're listening to KVSH on Voice of Vashon here on beautiful Vashon Island, Washington. And I am Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. I'm so excited. You can probably hear it in my voice. But Stirring the Pot is a show that was on and came to an abrupt halt during COVID. And so I'm really pleased and excited to be back. So we're going to be here on Tuesdays now, every other Tuesday for a while. And I'll be your host, but I'm lucky enough to have two people with me who are going to co-host. And before we start interrupting each other here,
yeah,
I thought maybe we would introduce each other. So I'll just say a little bit about who's who. I know Susan Powell. Hello, Susan.
Hi.
And Susan and I met, Facebook, really,
before
I think.
Before COVID.
Yeah, before COVID. We met before COVID. And among Susan's many talents, she's a chef and a gardener and a writer and a dog lover. She's a former restaurant owner and a caterer in Ashland, Oregon. And maybe some of you know or remember the restaurant Pilaf. Susan has a vast repertoire of cooking experience, ideas, and knowledge. And so I bribed her, and she came on to help.
Kind of a food junkie.
She makes her own crackers. So also, then there's Mr. Tom Conway.
Dun-dun-dun.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I think some of you probably know Tom. We met several years ago.
How did we meet anyway?
It was about pie.
Oh, it was. What isn't about pie?
I don't know what it is about pie, but you know, I always thought I was a pretty good pie baker till I met you, and then I just gave up.
Just put on your jammies and went back to bed.
I just called Tom and say, "Can I have a piece of pie, please?"
He
says,
"My
more.
Pleasure."
But anyway, Tom is. We met through many mutual interests, actually, like writing and dogs and architecture, photography, all of that kind of stuff.
Pot roast? Yeah, I think you served me pot roast the first time I went over to your house.
No, it was beef bourguignon.
Oh, sorry. Well, where I come from, we call that pot roast.
That's funny.
It was like French pot roast.
Yeah, well, it was good.
It had wine in it.
We had two desserts that night because Tom had to bring over a... I forget. Tarte Tatin, maybe? Maybe I made Tarte Tatin.
I think that's what you made. And I think I made a plum buckle.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I think you did. Yeah. I remember. Yeah.
It must have been plum season.
It must have been.
It must have been. Yeah, it was early fall.
You know how your memories change the season and what you ate? And it might have been like the dead of winter and I had peaches. Who knows?
I want to say a little bit about myself too, I guess.
Oh yeah.
I should. Yeah. Somebody told me. I'm a former food and travel writer and a corporate communications director for hospitality industry.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But basically I'm an avid and albeit amateur food historian. I love food history. And how it has affected our culture and the ways we think and the ways we travel.
Right.
And I really want you, audience and my cohorts here, to understand I'm not the expert. I read the experts. So that's...
We just act like we know everything.
Yeah, we just act like we know everything. So, you know, don't worry.
I'm going to say ditto.
We should chase those. We'll preface those things with like... You know, it is my opinion, but maybe we won't because that would
be everything. Well, and then we have to read this thing here that tells us that, you know, the views and opinions expressed are not necessarily.
That's right. The voice of fashion.
But yeah. So anyway, we're really happy to be here. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. We'll be on every other Tuesday, first and third Tuesdays, right? Yeah. First and third Tuesdays of the month. This being the first Tuesday.
And then we're going to alternate, right?
Right. And so we won't all three be here every time. It'll be two of us.
It's too much for our audience.
Yeah, they can't take it. We can't take it.
Too much of a good thing.
I can't take it. So anyway, I just want to say welcome, you two, and thank you so much for coming and adding to the show. You guys are the ones that make it happen, really. So...
Oh, it's all up to you.
Yeah.
We'll try to be interesting.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that. So what have you been doing? What's been going on since?
Well, in the most recent thing, like, an hour ago, I was making I love the Pacific Northwest for so many reasons, but where else can you live? And a friend drops by and says, you know, I had an extra piece of salmon.
Oh.
And I thought maybe you'd like it. And after I teared up and kissed her feet, I said, yes, I would. And so I totally took the most beautiful of fish and made the lowliest of sandwiches, but elevated it. And I made a filet of fish with salmon.
With your salmon.
And I did it on...
Oh, I love that idea.
It was basically on an English muffin.
Uh-huh.
I had Jarlsberg cheese.
Mm.
And after I did a light saute of the fish,
mm-hmm.
I put the Jarlsberg on, because, you know, filet of fish has, I think, American cheese and tartar sauce.
Oh, I think it does,
But
too.
I just had mayonnaise, and then I had my bread and butter or pickle.
Mm.
And then I upgraded a little more, and I had a really beautiful tomato left from the end of the season.
Oh, good.
And... like I like to say, I did hear angels sing.
and you're full.
And I'm full. And
that's pretty healthy.
I ruined a t-shirt from the drippings.
Oh, that's good. That's a good story.
Were the pickles on the sandwich?
They
or
were
on the
definitely
side?
On the sandwich.
Oh, yeah. On the
sandwich.
And you had to sort of do like a full four-finger grab on each
mm-hmm.
side so it would hold together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds wonderful.
I was very proud of my Filet-O-Fish.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. We really needed that.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very interesting way to use a nice filet of salmon.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, it was a nice little, it's about the size of a English muffin, that sort of
perfect,
beautiful piece of...
I like the thought that you didn't really... spend a lot of time thinking about, ooh, what should I do with this excellent piece of fish? I just throw it in a pan and I'll make a sandwich.
No caper sauce here, sister.
No. What about you, Miss Susan? What you been doing?
Canning, gardening.
Yeah, you have.
Hauling out the tomatoes.
Are the tomatoes the big canning item for you?
No, the tomatoes are past, and now the plums are past.
But you canned both of those?
Yes.
Okay. What do you do with the plums when you can them?
Oh, I roasted.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just tossed them with sugar and roasted them. And that made a nice syrup. And so I put those in jars.
Oh, they're so good.
And you water bath it?
And water bathed it for 15 minutes. And some of them I didn't water bath, and I only half filled the jars, and I filled them up with booze
mm-hmm.
because somebody's website said something about something about that.
Yeah.
And somebody's blog.
Mm-hmm.
And some I actually made jam.
Nice.
Nice.
And some I dehydrated. And some I pickled. I'm not really sure how those are going to be, but I did pickle them.
Pickle plums. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's something that I think we tend to not think about when we make pickles is to use a fruit. Like I'm thinking I love the idea of pickling a plum, like especially when they're not quite mm-hmm. ripe and they have a more of a rigid
right.
texture.
Right.
And I was thinking, I wonder if you could, I have all these quince coming on and I was thinking of pickling quince and seeing if that would work.
Did you look it up yet?
I haven't.
It sounds like it's been a thing.
It seems like it should be a thing, but I haven't found it yet.
Wow.
Well, I don't know that you'd want to actually pickle the quince. Maybe like the jelly, but do the jelly with vinegar and spices.
Oh. You know, because the quince changes so much when you cook it.
Yeah, like a spread, a spicy quince spread.
Now, why would you want to, what do you think would happen if you use just the solid slices? It would...
Because it's so hard and dense, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It really softens and gets beautiful
when it's...
I guess
that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got some quince coming on. I'm looking for them.
Membrillo. Oh, yes, membrillo.
I know.
But
I'm just going to do them with apples. Just going to do a quince applesauce.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it makes it such a beautiful color. Yeah. It's one of the prettiest colors in all of food.
It really is.
Is quince.
And the scent.
I know a bowl
of them sitting on the table, it's perfumes
all over the
whole room.
It really does. Yeah.
And in case people aren't familiar with quince, quince looks like a fuzzy pear. They're they're bigger than a pear, and they're a really hard fruit when you pick them off the tree. You really can't eat them. They're one of the few fruits that you really have to cook to bring out the flavor. But before you cook them and you're leaving them out in the room on the table, mm-hmm. They emit this beautiful scent, and that's
wonderful.
When you know they're ripe.
Then they're ripe, right.
And it's really quite lovely.
I wanted to talk about the plums for a second, Susan, because Susan gave me a basket of plums, and I...
I couldn't give away enough.
I mean,
it was
enough that I
those
could...
Those really good Italian plums?
Yes.
Yeah, I love
the
those.
The best.
You should see under the trees now. It's just a carpet of blue because I've never seen so many plums in my entire life.
I was going to make jam because it was plenty to make jam. And day by day by day, I walk past the bowl and take a plum and eat it. And, I better have another one. And then I'd have another one. And then pretty soon it was like, well, gosh, there's not enough left for jam. I better have some more.
That's okay. So I'll give you a jar.
There
no
was
worries.
So good. But what I wanted to tell you happened was then I did take some of them and just put them in a saucepan and put a tiny bit of water in there and some sugar. I said, I'm going to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking jam, of course. And I forgot about it. And it sat there and it stewed until it was kind of caramelized. It was kind of like when you do taffy pull, you know, it was
like
that.
Almost a leather.
It was like leather. And so then I tasted it and it was unbelievably good. So I thought this has to go either on salmon or chicken, like a fruit sauce on something like that. Yeah. So I put a little tiny bit of, what's that really sweet white wine? Riesling.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit of Riesling in it.
Or Gewurztraminer would work.
Yeah, to stir it up a little bit and loosen it a little bit. Oh, my goodness, was it good on chicken.
Oh,
that sounds really
so good.
Do you know what I did with plums this year for the first time? Because I got so many. I don't know what happened. I think the weeks or two leading into the pollination of plums on the island, it was perfect conditions because everyone got
it must
so
have been.
Many.
Yeah.
And I did with the same type of plums. I made I don't know that much about Asian cooking, but I'm learning. I'm trying to learn how to do it. And it's been really fun and I'm learning a lot. But the one thing I wanted to make was a plum sauce. Mm-hmm. And so what's so funny is you're looking up recipes and you sort of want the one that you want it to be as authentic as possible. And so trying to find out what's authentic and what isn't. And then when you're seeing ones that have, well, you put a little bit of ketchup and then something else, I'm going about, okay, not the authentic one. So I finally found one that I feel the author, assured us that it was authentic and I was really impressed because it wasn't a sweet sauce. It was almost a savory, oddly, like a ketchup without having ketchup
without
in
having
it,
ketchup
sort of a plummy ketchup.
Ginger and star anise.
Exactly.
And,
five spice.
I was thinking too of, five spice of chutney, plum chutney.
Oh yeah.
Yum. So,
You know what the secret ingredient was of the plum sauce though, this particular one? Was a cooked yam that you pureed.
I've seen that recipe, which gives it a certain consistency.
Yeah, a nice creaminess. Yeah.
The funny thing is I was heading to make the plum sauce and I went out to the pantry to check what my jar situation was. Mm-hmm. I was shuffling around the jars and I found a whole case of the plum sauce that I made last year. Everybody that I came in contact with got a jar of plum sauce. But then again, I never made the plum sauce, so now I don't have any.
it is that thing. Like, there's a point in the year where you're trying to sort of gauge what you made, what you're gonna make, and what you have.
Right.
And
what you'll actually eat. Because
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we end up with stuff on the shelves that are like, oh, look, there's those dill pickles
that we don't like anymore. Yeah.
Well, that's like Truman here is here and he's helping us. He's engineering.
Hi, Truman.
And he said he's had how many gallons of grape juice? 10 gallons of grape juice that he canned to use throughout the year, make grape jelly. That he says is unbelievable. So
it is unbelievable.
Cases.
15 cases, yeah. So if your
jars?
Kids need some peanut butter and jelly,
pint jars.
Well, you see Truman
Call
on the
Truman.
Street. Go, hey Truman, where's my
grape jelly?
Don't leave your car open. It's the new zucchini.
Right. We were talking about everything we're talking about. And one of the things that I love about the internet now is that we can get everything we want to learn about on there. And
from reputable sources.
Wait a minute. I don't want to talk about this yet.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, should we?
Okay.
Here, I'll make a sound like.
Okay.
Thank you.
Backing up. We're backing up. We're backing up.
I want to talk.
You didn't hear that.
Tom, what I want to talk about right now is that you did something very interesting this week, recently.
Oh, yeah.
Vashon history.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
sorry, I forget what sometimes it goes in and out of the head of mine quickly. Yeah. I was really fortunate to be invited to go on a tour of the Mackay barreling plant. And Renee was, she said, "Oh, I'm taking down some banners and stuff." And she goes, "I'm going to be over there if you want to come over and look at it," because I had expressed interest. And it's one of those places where you can really just sort of squint, close your eyes, and you can hear the sounds of that barreling factory and the people.
Let's explain. People don't know. Explain who Mackay or what Mackay Gardens is.
Well,
for those who don't know.
Yeah, Mackay Farm and Gardens, it's just right off of a bank.
107th.
And it was the largest, I guess, strawberry barreling plant in the region. And the Mackay family, actually they built and again, I'm not an expert on this. This is a test on my retention. If I was a good listener, that the family built the barreling plant before they even built their own home. But their home, their beautiful little bungalow, is right next door now. And so there's a foundation that has taken over the property and made it the special place that it always was, but it's really renewed and reinvigorated that place as something special for the island and the people who live here and the memory of the people that created it. And so I was really, really touched by, as a place of history, when you're there, you get a real sense of at least in my modern little pea brain of, you know, maybe what was going on and how much work was involved. And this is a big, a barreling plant is basically, it's a large loading dock that, when you get into the warehouse, they're processing and grading strawberries. So they're taking them from like the perfect ones that go to the fresh market to the ones that aren't so pretty that they maybe make jam with
or
they freeze. They probably freeze those. And then the ones that are lesser, the least quality, as far as attractiveness, they're processing into jams and jellies. But it was really pretty fascinating. So they're doing fundraisers. They've stabilized the building. There's a lot of work to do to sort of bring it back up. So it could be, they want to use it because it was such a vital part of the economy here. And now they want to use it as who knows, like they're taking all sorts of ideas of event spaces
of things. Yeah. It's such a beautiful property.
Yeah.
So, and the history there, you can feel it. You really can feel it.
It's really fun. And then some of the cool things about it, there was, you saw these cisterns that they used to trap all the water off the roof.
Yeah.
And then they'd have cisterns that would collect all the water that they discovered when they would be using it for the, whatever they do, their water source.
Yeah. Wow.
I thought that they packed the strawberries into barrels with sugar.
And
they shipped them off to Tacoma. And they traveled by rail from Tacoma. And it made me think, and I don't know if this has any validity whatsoever, but do you remember when you were young, back in those days, and you got frozen strawberries, bird's eye strawberries, in those little kind of rectangular packages.
It was like a rectangular tuna can almost.
Yeah, but taller.
It was a spam can. Exactly. It was like a spam can.
Yeah.
But in the freezer, it was paper.
Right, paper with a metal lid.
Right, with a metal lid.
And when I heard about Mackay and the barrels, that was exactly the image. And I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't happen over in Tacoma as packaging, because refrigerated freight was a real big deal in those days.
Right. Yeah, and I've even seen, I don't know if it was related to the, I'm sure it was because they were the largest producer, but I've seen historic photos of boxcars on barges that they would bring over on a barge and it would still stay on the barge. And then they would load the box car on the barge at the dock and then wheel it back over to wherever the rail terminus was.
A dock here.
Wow.
Yeah. The barge was...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it is really fascinating. And then the beautiful garden that she made.
Yeah.
She was homesick for Japan. Yeah. She made that wonderful Japanese garden. So
and it looks really good now, too.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it looks really good now. Yeah. It's that really lovely time where you still have things that have a little bit of blossom. You have things that have color and things that are creating more color.
And things that are waning.
Waning. Good word, waning.
You know, food history to me, as you know, is a passion. And I just find it interesting. I remember very little of it, but it comes in, you know, and I can read it and I can like it and talk about it. But one of the things I was thinking about when we're going to talk about Vashon food history. I don't know any Vashon food history right now, but what I found out thinking of you and pies, I wanted to do a little bit of pie history because I just happened upon this article called Hard to Digest, How Apple Pie is Like America.
Ain't that the truth?
And it's Matt Siegel, he wrote Transatlantic History of Pies, and he's a food historian and a writer. But anyway, he's drawing all these ideas up around the apple pie and awful America. Here's something from 1891 that he quotes. The great beauty of an apple pie breakfast, aside from its power to generate indigestion, writes R.K. Munkittrick in 1891, lies in the fact that it doesn't leave behind it a number of dishes thickly encrusted with ham grease to be cracked with a hammer or melted all over a candle.
It's nice to know we had the same problems back in 1891.
I know. And then Harriet Beecher Stowe in 1869 wrote, the pie is an English tradition, which, planted on American soil, forthwith ran rampant and burst forth into an untold variety of genera and species. Not merely the old traditional mince pie, but 1,000 strictly American seedlings from that main stock evince the power of American housewives to adapt old institutions to new uses. And, you know.
We're so creative.
Yeah.
And what a lovely passage that was, too.
I liked it.
That was really great. Yeah. And especially then, that there's such a, apples were so prominent in the landscape.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know Charles Dudley Warner, but he wrote this in 1872. This country was founded by men who had pie for breakfast, pie for dinner, pie for supper. In addition, they usually had a slice or so before going to bed at night. The only time they did not eat pie was when they were asleep at work or in church. And then the author goes on to blame the corruption of American youth on the invention of marshmallow nut sundaes and banana splits and pie. And he said Lincoln could never have freed the slaves if it weren't for his habitual indulgence in pie.
And he's given some serious power to the pie.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. But then
power
to the pie. Well, speaking of slogans, here's one. In 1865, British journalist George Augustus Sala wrote in his diary of America that the real social curse of the Atlantic states is pie. They have an unholy appetite for pie, and it works untold woes. They are pie fiends.
Really?
And are they all these references to pie? Are they assuming always that it's apple pie?
No. The article talks about that. It could be any kind of pie.
Uh-huh.
But the apple pie was, you know, hard to digest and that kind of thing. So, no, they're talking about savory and sweet pies. Uh-huh. Eventually it gets into the...
You know, I'm trying to think, like, if you're cooking back then, what benefit, like, it was to make a pie as opposed to something else? Because it was sort of the complete sort of sandwich before sandwiches.
And it's transportable.
Yeah.
You know.
And
but
you
not nearly
tents.
As much as a pasty.
Yeah. Yeah. So
well,
I wonder,
it should be a folded over a hand pie. I mean, in the South, they did have hand pies.
Yeah. Deep fried, baby.
Yeah. Ooh, peach.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking to
that's
it.
That's a good one. Pie. You know how I feel about pie. We're on a first name basis.
And, I feel the same way.
It. You know, and I was with when I was fascinated with pie was when it was sort of a little bit of a forbidden thing where my grandmother, she would make pies when we would visit, and she would keep two out, one for my father, who was her son-in-law, and one, but he was in esteem. He was esteemed son-in-law because he got a pie and also,
A whole pie.
And then one of her sons got a whole pie and we didn't get to touch it. So I knew that it had to have some sort of merit as a dessert. And then of course I was hooked.
Of course.
Right. The forbidden fruit.
The forbidden fruit pie.
The forbidden pie.
Have you thought about, we were talking last week about shortcuts in the kitchen and sort of secrets that nobody knows or that we discovered.
Yes.
Or ways to cheat.
Yes.
Because we like shortcuts.
I don't have a shortcut, but I did learn something really interesting this week. It was in a recipe for a cucumber salad that you salted the cucumbers and you smashed them with your potato peeler.
Yeah.
And it had walnuts.
Oh.
And you soaked the walnuts for 5 hours covered in water. You drained them, and then you soaked them again overnight. And you know that real tannic bite that a walnut has?
Yes.
It's kind of...
Some people don't like
irritating.
It.
It's kind of rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Hmm.
But the nut is still...
It's still walnutty.
It's not mushy.
What'd you soak it in?
Just in water. Cover it with water. And it drains, it leaches out that tannic. Oh, dear.
I don't think you're on. Oh, okay. Are you on now?
No, I am.
There you are.
I have a question, and I've been thinking about this for quite a while. My family used to think I was weird. I'm originally from Texas, and they love pecans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Darn tootin'.
Yeah.
And there'd always be a
What's
big...
What's not to love?
Well, exactly. There'd always be a big bowl of them. I did not like pecans. And my family said, are you adopted? You know, did you drop in from... But I found that I also don't like walnuts. But if they're cooked in something, I love them both.
Uh-huh.
And you just said something that just got my attention. Is there an acid or something on them before they're cooked?
I just think that's their net. You know, if you've ever harvested them, I don't know about pecans, but we used to harvest
the walnuts. Yeah.
And I actually love it. You pull this green
husk
off
and
your hands get all purple and it lasts for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And then you have to dry them.
Yeah.
And they have that bitterness. It's not.
But I thought you said like a tannic acid.
Yeah,
or
but
something.
Don't they?
Yeah,
don't
but
they,
I don't know what it is really.
Don't just, they have like a that little brown
pulp.
Like the pulp that's on the outside of the walnut?
Yeah.
I bet that's what is the tannic.
But I find that I just I'm
I don't
sorry
know.
To interrupt your show.
No,
but
that's fine. True,
it is.
No,
fascinating.
It is.
No, fascinating.
There's like an acridity to it that is sort of, because I have friends who the same way they don't like because they say there's a thing that almost gives them a cottony mouth sort of feel
astringent,
an off-putting side or aftertaste.
Yeah. I'm wondering though. I mean, but I think they're related. You know, I mean,
I think it is too.
Try it. Because I was just amazed because I'd never.
And what did you say though? You did to get rid of it?
Well, you soaked it for 5 hours at room temperature, covered with water.
Yeah.
And then you drained them and you soaked them again overnight in the fridge.
Oh.
And just regular water, nothing
water.
In it.
Yeah.
And then you'll dry them then, or?
Yeah, you could. Well, yeah, I just kind of let them sit in a colander for a while and they dried off.
Yeah.
And then I added them to the
Truman,
cucumber.
Oh, Truman, try it and
I'm
report
going
back.
To. I'm going
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated because, I mean, I thought about this just recently, really, about.
Interesting.
Why is it that I don't like those two, but I like them cooked, you know, like pecan pie?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
how can you not?
That?
Well,
yeah.
I found that recipe on a website that I had always blown past. It's called Eating Well.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I equated well with healthy.
I'm not going to bother with that.
I was not interested. But I was looking for a specific recipe, and the recipe came up, and it was on that website.
Oh.
And then I started looking at other things that they had, and that's where I found the – and because I also have lots of cucumbers to to deal
and
with
they're
these
delicious
days.
Cucumbers. Hey, so speaking of websites,
yeah,
we're learning things from the web all the time. And I was wondering if you guys could share some of your favorite websites or podcasts or, you know, YouTube videos that you're watching. Like, what are we learning out there in the world today?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Can I back up
the
car just a bit?
Because
I was going to give you a tip that I didn't. Well, I have. It's really a silly
tip.
Spit
it out, Tom.
But you know, like you're always making a recipe and you just need a little of something and you're going like, oh geez, I have to go to the store. Yeah. I have to, you know, make it a big production when I just need, as they, you know, in the fancy books, the fancy cookbooks, they'll be lardons, but in Tom Conway's house, they're bacon.
Bacon.
And so bacon.
Snipped with the scissors.
Yeah, bacon.
Into lardons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but what I do is I'll chop up, this is my time saving, and it helps me have it always at hand is I'll get a pound of bacon and I'll chop it up in sort of chunky chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put it in an ice cube tray designated specifically for this purpose. And then, cause otherwise you get some greasy drinking water. And so,
is it a silicone ice cream tray?
Exactly. Yeah. So then I'll freeze it. And then you just pop it out like ice cubes and I have it in a Ziploc bag. So anytime if I'm making green beans and I want to have like that
you just
flavor.
Need a little more umami or something. That's a great idea.
I like it.
So that's usual umami.
Well, one of my silly shortcuts that I have is, I don't know if you like sweet potato hash or not, but I do. I love sweet potatoes. I adore them. And so I was...
And you mean sweet potatoes, not yams?
Oh, I don't care, but I don't like... I like... No, actually, it's yams.
The orange ones.
Yeah. And they're all sweet potatoes, and I know that's wrong.
Yeah.
But
okay,
it's yam hash. You want to say that?
Yam hash.
So do you grate them raw and then?
No. Well, no.
I know nothing about yam hash.
No, you chop them raw into little cubes.
Okay.
And then you put them on a sheet pan with some onions and roast them with some olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
So till that's done.
Okay.
And then I do it a couple different ways after that. You can put, I don't ever add regular potatoes. I just use sweet potatoes. And then you can use bacon or breakfast sausage or pastrami or whatever you've got around. My favorite is chorizo. And put some chorizo in the sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you'd put a fried egg. And then on top of that or beside it, maybe a little guacamole and some sour cream.
Nice.
And it's so good.
Over easy, sunny side up.
Oh, probably mine would be sunny side.
Okay, a little bit of goo.
Goo, a lot of goo.
A lot of goo.
But no ooky.
No ooky, just goo.
Goo, but no ooky.
mommy no likey ooky.
Yeah. And then, but my hack about this thing.
Yes.
My hack is, you know, chopping those sweet potatoes is hard work because they're so hard.
Exhausting.
It's terrible.
It's like
it breaks your back.
Forced labor.
Carpal tunnel syndrome. Uh-huh.
Over every day.
Yeah.
So then.
I'd need a nap.
Look, I know this is a first world problem.
No,
it's not. I bought a bag of Alexa frozen sweet potato fries.
Oh.
And I just spread them out on my cutting board and went whack, 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 whack all the way down the cutting board. And they were nice little cubes.
No, that's a brilliant idea.
And I could tell the difference, you know, but I don't think anybody else.
Have you tried it with tater tots?
Ooh. No.
since we're going down the freezer aisle, let's go lowbrow.
Yeah, what would be in there?
Tater tots
and green chilies, maybe.
I don't know. As a former lunch lady, I might have to pass on that.
Oh, and then I was going to tell you. Did we already talk about cheater creme anglaise?
No. We did it. We did pre-show because we
didn't
fascinated
talk about it
by
live.
It. Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Because we prepare about for like 6 minutes before we go.
Was that where we talked about the French toast?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Okay. So the secret hack, and I learned this from Jacques Papin, about creme anglaise. If you want to serve it with, I don't know, some berries or some lovely cake thing that you want to drip some or drizzle, I guess, some creme anglaise on. What you should do
if you
want to
fancy it up.
You fancy it up.
Why don't you explain what creme anglaise is? Just So people
it's like sauce. It's like a hollandaise or a béarnaise or it's a custardy sauce. This one's made
with sweet sauce.
Eggs. Yeah, it's sweet. And it's made with, it's custardy.
It's basically it's like melted vanilla ice cream.
Well, excuse me, you just stole my punchline.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
I thought you already said that.
Did I already say that?
You already said it. You did.
Okay. Jacques Pepin says, when you're in trouble, get some good vanilla ice cream and melt it and use that as your creme anglaise. And I love that idea.
That's brilliant.
Susan heard this other idea from Jacques about creme anglaise. Susan, you want to tell us about that?
Oh, he said to make French toast, if you have a little bit of vanilla ice cream left in the freezer, you just put it in the microwave and warm it up, and mm-hmm. you dip your bread in that melted vanilla ice cream, which is, in essence, creme anglaise.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're making French toast, you're using egg and milk or
cream
and
yeah.
maybe a little sugar, which is kind of an uncooked creme anglaise. So you go back to the drawing board and you just use melted vanilla ice cream.
I love that idea.
Fry your toast, soak it on both sides, he said, and you fry it for 3 minutes in butter.
Always butter.
Flip it, always butter. And serve it with maple syrup and maybe some peaches on top.
I wonder what kind of bread would work best for that.
It looked, maybe like one of those little videos.
Some Texas toast, maybe.
Maybe some Texas toast.
It looked like a very thick slice of bread that he had.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have to be a pretty hearty piece of bread to soak that long.
Yeah,
The regular white bread
stuff. Maybe even like a baguette.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Which would be pan perdu. Which would be the French, lost bread. You wouldn't, in so many cultures, you don't throw away bread. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the Middle East, if it falls on the floor, you pick it up and kiss it and put it on the shelf or something. It's just the
tell somebody else
thing.
Who doesn't know what's on the floor eats it.
Or kissed for that matter.
Have you kissed your bread today?
Oh, gosh.
Only my French toast.
The first time I made creme anglaise, not the first time. I really like it because it's got all my favorite things in it. Sugar, dairy,
what's not to
vanilla
like?
Beans. Yeah. And
except vanilla beans are $700 a pound.
They are. I'm surprised, people who grow pot should just forget that and grow vanilla orchids. They make more money. But my nephew was visiting, and he and I was showing him how to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty young at the time. And it was like I had turned dirt into gold. He's like, so even to this day, like 20 years later, he goes, do you remember when you made that stuff? And I'm going, the stuff is called, I always explain, it's creme anglaise. That stuff. He goes, you want to make it again? And so it's like our tradition.
And so what'd you serve it with?
It's when I grow, so many raspberries, and I just love them.
I
think
the
best thing is over fresh raspberries.
It's the best way to use creme
anglaise. And pound
anglaise.
Cake, maybe.
Yeah, maybe not.
Not even that,
just
really.
Raspberries.
No, I was trying to just, I was showing off.
Fancy.
No, yeah, it's just raspberries. Just dang old raspberries.
Dang old raspberry on the bush.
That's right.
Yeah. So, creme anglaise, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
I
probably derailed you.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, do you know anything about egg substitutes? Like, do you know if you're, baking, like happens to me sometimes, and you need four eggs and you've got three,
mm-hmm.
and you don't, same thing, you don't want to go to the store.
Yeah.
Do you know what you would do, or would you have to go to the store?
Well, I haven't ever done this. I'd probably prefer to go to the store.
Yeah.
But you could open a can of garbanzo beans.
Right.
And drain.
What do you call it?
Aquafaba.
Yeah.
Fava or faba?
Faba.
Faba.
Mm-hmm. Like you are fabulous.
And you can use that. You can whip it like egg whites. I mean,
seriously?
It's a vegan thing. Yeah.
They make whipped cream out of the juice of a can of beans.
I'm so confused.
It's true.
So you take a can of garbanzo beans, you drain it.
You save what you're draining off.
Oh, you save what
you don't want the beans. You just want the
liquid.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Now I get it. Yeah. I was thinking wouldn't that be like a little
mashed beans?
but look it up sometime. There
put it on
is
your cake,
a fan-
you'll love it.
A fantastic vegan chocolate cake made with garbanzo beans.
Okay.
I'm game. I'd try it.
Oh, it's delicious. Yeah. And that's another thing that I've recently learned is how to make the garbanzo beans really creamy. Like, because you can buy Middle Eastern processed beans, and they're always really soft and creamy because they like to use them for hummus.
For hummus, yeah.
It's baking soda. There's about half a teaspoon of baking soda in maybe a cup or two of soaked beans. And you can either soak it.
So when you're soaking your beans, you add some baking soda?
Or the recipe that I've most recently come across is when you drain your soaked beans, you put them in a pan with the baking soda and you stir it until all the water is off of the beans. And then you put the rest of your water in.
Wow.
And they get so creamy. So creamy and delicious for hummus. So I think with the cake, that would be really, really good too.
I'd try it. Well, another, flaxseed meal, they say. Because they have a earthy, nutty flavor, and they're rich in omega-3.
Healthy.
It's health food. 1 egg equals 1 tablespoon ground flax seeds mixed with 2 to 3 tablespoons of water.
Yeah. You know, the trouble with all this is I have chickens.
Well, I know, but some people don't. And I'm just talking about in an emergency.
Oh, and those people have flax seeds.
Well, and they have those.
In an emergency, I go out there and I said, look, lady, there's 9 nesting boxes. Pick one.
Just to be clear, yes. I'd probably go to your house to get an egg rather than do aquafaba.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
they are, you know what? You have a good point, though, because they are molting this time of year, and I don't have...
And they don't have many.
No, they're stingy.
But I want to tell you some more of these things.
Yeah, I'm all ears.
Use them or not. Chia seeds. You know about chia seeds?
Chia.
Chia.
Yeah. Well, 1 egg equals 1 tablespoon chia seeds. And I know that works. I saw my daughter-in-law do it.
Yeah, chia always reminds me of tadpole eggs when I see it.
Do you have to soak them, or what do you do with them?
You put 2 to 3 tablespoons in a little thing and soak your tablespoon of chia.
It becomes a gelatinous mass.
But doesn't it take time?
About 5 minutes. It doesn't take very long at all.
Oh.
And it comes gelatinous, and it just looks like egg white, kind of
spawn.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, this one I don't know if I believe. I want you to tell me if you believe this one. This one is mashed banana. 1 egg equals 1/4 cup of mashed banana. And the author says the ingredients work best in chewy baked goods like brownies. And in a vegan baking experiment, what does this say? She used mashed bananas as a replacement for eggs in a muffin. And she said all the muffins were good, but the banana, where she used the banana, was the best. So I don't know.
Maybe we should report back. Make a note, Linda. What, you want to try it?
Well, sure.
And you can bring them back and we can try
them. Oh, you want me to try it all?
Yeah,
Well, I already know about chia seeds, but
About that stuff. The brownies. I want the brownies.
You want the brownies?
The brownie one with the mashed potatoes. I mean, the
mashed banana.
Banana.
I'll try it.
I think we need to try that.
I will.
And then I'll do something next show.
Sure you will.
Yeah, okay. She'll forget.
Then applesauce. Now, we all know about applesauce as a way to cook low fat. But it's an everyday ingredient. Mixing it in, you can stir a pinch of baking powder into the applesauce before mixing it in to prevent the applesauce from weighing down the batter.
Oh.
But it says 1 egg equals 1/4 cup of applesauce. So if you're making a cake, I mean, I don't know. I'm not.
Well, and that's funny because with the applesauce last year, I had more than I wanted to can.
Yeah.
And so I froze. It's taking up space in the freezer as we speak.
Yeah.
In little silicone muffin cups. And
that'd be a perfect
use. And I thought, because, well, you're always finding these recipes that say 1/4 cup of applesauce. This will be perfect. But of course, I never.
Yeah. That's.
But I like the idea of sort of pre-leavening it with its own.
Right. And then
baking powder so it doesn't detract from the baking powder that's in the regular recipe.
That's in the recipe. Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Hmm.
I like how we do it regularly. But if you're, you know, in a pinch. Of course, yeah. If you don't have an egg, I doubt you're going to have any chia seeds.
No.
You know, that's the thing.
I had friends who have it for breakfast every morning. They raved about it like mm-hmm. it was butterscotch pudding or something. But
chia seeds?
Yeah, but it really, I did not share their enthusiasm.
No, I don't either. No, I did some cooking for someone once, and she has a very healthy diet. And one of the things that
which means limited palate. I'm sorry.
No.
No, okay.
And she, no, that's not true, actually. But
okay,
for breakfast, she likes pancakes, and the pancakes that you make are a mashed banana, 2 eggs, 4 ounces of chia seeds, 4 ounces of hemp hearts, and water. And that's it. That's a pancake.
Are there any hummingbird tears in there? That's some rarefied ingredients.
But let me tell you something about those things.
Okay.
I was looking at him, making him thinking, oh my God, who could do this? You know, but then I tasted one. She eats them with berries on top, and she puts a little maple extract in them. So there's that hint of maple flavor in there. So I tasted one, and I thought it was really nasty. And then the next day I made some more, and I tasted a different one. And they, you know.
They weren't as nasty.
They weren't as nasty.
That is but such a selling point.
They were less nasty.
Less nasty. Oh, here, honey, I just made some muffins. They're less nasty than the day before.
Oh my God, we're off the rails. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I want to talk about something that some people think is nasty.
Okay, good.
It's one of my favorite herbs, and I discovered it.
She just made a segue, didn't she?
That was really good, yeah.
Oh, I'm new at this.
Wait, should we see if we can guess? So it's a herb people don't like.
Some people do not like it.
Is
tarragon.
It a green? I was going to say tarragon, yeah.
No, it's not.
Oh. Turmeric?
Nope.
Is it Asian? Is it Italian?
South American.
Oh.
I mean, well, Central American, Mexican.
Oh. Oregano?
No, but I love Mexican oregano.
I do, too. It's the best.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's mostly used in beans.
Oh, cumin.
No.
Oh. Hmm.
It's epazote.
Oh, I never use it.
Oh, well, it's wonderful. I love it. And I had a little plant of it, and it was in the greenhouse that got demolished by the snow.
What does it look like?
Well, it looks like this big old tall weed.
Oh, does it?
And I brushed against it. It was in with my, you know, the last of the tomatoes. And I brushed against it, and I was like, what's that smell? And somehow.
Oh, I
did not plant it, but it had gone to seed when I lost the plant in the greenhouse.
Okay.
So it has replanted itself, and it's beautiful. So I started, you know, so I'm going to harvest all the leaves, and you can buy it in little bags in the Mexican grocery stores, mm-hmm. but usually they have, it's just chopped up with the stems, and it's dried, and I don't want to put those twiggy things in the beans.
Right.
So I'm just going to do the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I saw
Pinto beans or black beans. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Pot of beans. And it has a carminative effect.
What?
Which means it takes care of the nasty result of eating beans.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. The ones that are good for your heart.
Yes. Instead of... Yes.
And you know, the more you eat, okay, I'll stop right there.
Right.
Excuse me, but there's
But it's a member of the goosefoot family, which is a weed that I used to always have, but I haven't had it since I've gardened on Vashon,
mm-hmm.
but which is highly, highly nutritious. So, you should throw it in the salad or throw it in the pot. But
what's it taste like?
What's the flavor? Can you describe it? Is it like a sagey kind of thing?
Maybe
or is
a
it
little
like
sagey.
Margarine-y.
But it's more, it's kind of bitter.
Oh.
But I don't
Well, that sounds nice.
Well, I don't dislike bitter. I think bitter.
It's almost like it's.
Off,
what did you just say? It's not as icky.
It's not as nasty.
It's less nasty. It's less nasty than some other herbs. Okay, I'm gonna make you.
I'm gonna make those pancakes too. I'm gonna bring those pancakes in.
Oh, episode day pancakes.
Oh, that's interesting.
No, and it's a real beautiful. You know, it's beautiful too. Yeah.
And so, do you use it anywhere else?
I don't know of anywhere else.
Epa.
Epazote.
Zote. Epazote.
You know, fast forward 9 months from now, there are going to be some children on Vashon named Espazote.
That's a pretty nice name.
Like, yeah, it is. They go like, oh, we heard this name on the radio Espazote. Show. We loved it.
No, but it reminds me of Zorro. Espazote.
Espazote.
Yeah.
But it is.
I'm here to avenge the death of my father.
Espazote.
Well, thank you for that. I think that's
that's a rarity. Yeah, we don't know about that.
I mean, I don't even know about that.
Oh yeah, it's.
I've seen it in recipes, and I've dismissed it as but I haven't ever experimented with it.
I don't think it's used in it. Well, no, because I did read that some people put it in quesadillas.
Ah. And who doesn't love a good quesadilla?
Oh, yum.
You know, and what a simple, you're talking about your wonderful salmon sandwich, but I had a quesadilla.
Oh, Truman just gave us a picture of Epazote.
Oh, yeah.
It looks a little like, it almost looks succulent, the way the leaves are.
Yeah, it almost looks like lemon balm.
Lemon balm, yeah. It's really pretty. So
mine is rangier than that.
Rangier?
Yeah, and the leaves are little. What do you call that little?
Hey, do you know? Since we're talking about sort of obscure herbs, or not obscure, but maybe we don't know about. One of my discoveries, which it's like, well, I didn't discover it, but a friend of mine shared it with me, and I'm going to take full credit.
Okay, good.
A friend of mine, Jeanette, who is a wonderful cook. She was telling me about this jam she got, and she said it was strawberry rose geranium, and I went, "Well, that doesn't sound right," because I didn't realize. I always knew that rose geranium was a nice aromatic and a scented leaf, but I didn't know rose geranium that you could use it in a culinary way. I thought, you know, because I just thought the leaves would be sort of again acrid or bitter or weird or soapy like lavender is. Excuse me. That was for lavender. Yeah. And so, lavender cooking.
Ditto.
Yeah. So anyway, I decided to make strawberry. I tried to replicate this jam, made strawberry jam, and I steeped rose geranium leaves in it, like about 10 of them. And they look horrific. You know, they look like sort of slimy spinach after about 10 minutes. Yeah. But then, of course, you take them out. You don't leave them in the jam. And oh my gosh, it was like, it was like 10 truckloads of rose petals. Like anytime I've made anything with, you know, where people say, oh, have you ever had rose petal jam? And again, a little over opinionated on this. I just think like it's, you know, you keep telling yourself that's good because you're chewing through rose petals and the idea is lovely, but it doesn't really taste like rose petals, I think.
But it's you have to have the certain kind of rose
exactly.
petals.
Exactly.
And the, you know, like when you pull a petal off and it's white at the bottom, that part has to go away.
Okay.
In a regular. It's not the specific kind of.
Of rose?
Of rose.
Well, now we have a shortcut because I'll tell you, rose geranium, it's like you're eating a bucket load of roses.
Well, it's very fragrant.
And what kind of jam did you put it in?
Strawberry.
Strawberry.
And still, it's really nice. And it's really good. I also did it in apple jelly.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, okay.
And you have a rose geranium plant.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
And I overwinter it.
Hey, you guys, we're going to run out of time in a minute. I mean, we've got a few minutes left, but I wanted to, did you have something you were going to say, Tom? I mean, you always do, but was there something in particular?
I was the kid that the teachers, the report card always said, lack self-control.
Mine always said, Linda should stop visiting with her classmates so much.
I still lack self-control.
Me too. So, you know, we talked earlier about how we're going to trade hosting the show. And what I want to know is, how are we going to decide who's going to host first? with me.
I don't know. Or should we just
on the 19th?
So it's two times a month, right?
The show's on twice a month.
Oh, do you think we should just stick with three? I'm sort of liking this, but we don't have. We can talk about it amongst ourselves.
Oh,
but we were going to talk about pumpkins because it's October.
Oh yeah, we will. Oh, we will. I just want to get this piece in before we do that.
Okay.
She's going to start crying because we're not talking about pumpkins.
But, because I found a perfect recipe.
Okay. Okay. Let's table that then.
Okay. We'll talk about that amongst ourselves.
So never mind.
Never mind.
Okay.
Pumpkins. Have you had any pumpkins lately?
We did.
Pumpkin kibbeh.
Talk about pumpkins. What? No.
Kibbeh.
Really?
Yeah. Well, kibbeh is you use bulgur.
Yeah.
And it's
Lebanese dish.
Lebanese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that eating well thing, it was like pumpkin kibbeh. And it's the bulgur with pumpkin, and it's the kind that you shape into a little football. So you put a bunch of the pumpkin and the bulgur in your palm of your hand, and of course it's cooked with other things there.
Yeah.
And you make a depression, and then they put in I think they said actually sorrel leaves, but you could use any kind of greens. It had a little spot of some green and cheesy thing, and then you shape it into a little football and you fry it. What could be more perfect for Sunday afternoons in October?
My mom's family is Lebanese. And so she used to make kibbeh a lot, and it would be, but you know what they would put in the middle? They'd put, I love the idea of pumpkin. They would put pine nuts. Pine nuts would be in the middle of theirs.
Aha.
Oh, that sounds
good. That was a nice
too.
Little surprise.
Yeah, really
you could
nice.
Just, you know, start saving in for the next 6 months and buy a pound of pine nuts.
Yes, exactly.
6 months at least.
At least.
And just don't try to buy vanilla too.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Not in the same, the same year.
I know. Yesterday I was baking something and I used my last vanilla. I mean, it was my last vanilla. And I thought, oh, no. I have to start a savings account.
we have to go to a Mexican market.
Well, yeah, we do.
Do you know, there was a time when I used to call the golden age of vanilla bean, and it was when on eBay there were all these people, they weren't really bootlegging, I'm sure it was legitimate, but they were selling a quarter pound. There was somebody in Tacoma that I would always buy it from, and I'd get a quarter pound of vanilla bean for $9.99.
What?
No way.
Way.
A quarter pound.
Yeah. And so now those days are over.
Yeah.
They're back up to full market rate. And but there was a time when they were sort of flooded, all these sort of side sellers,
mm-hmm.
and you could get them on eBay, but you could still get them much more reasonable on eBay from people selling them.
And then you
have to
just store them in a vat of sugar.
Exactly.
Yes.
Or some brandy.
Yeah. Oh, well, that'd be good
or
too.
Or rum. Rum works good too.
Yeah,
but
or bourbon.
Oh, so then would you use if you soak it in bourbon or rum or whatever?
Yeah.
Then, when you're making cookies that or a cake that wants vanilla bean, you mm-hmm. use that vanilla bean with the liquor flavor in
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Oh, I haven't done that.
And then it's kind of a nice soft bean.
I've done the sugar thing.
Do the
I haven't done
scrapey.
The booze. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That sounds good. Are you going to make those?
We'll save up for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where are we?
Are we? Okay. Is it tomorrow? What is it?
It's not tomorrow yet, but
okay.
What else have you got on your list, Susan?
Tom?
What do I have on my list?
Mm-hmm. Did we leave anything out?
Oh, you know, I was going to give you another good shortcut.
What?
A friend of mine, Jackie Island gal, mm-hmm. Jackie. she when she gets garlic and she has too much and she doesn't want it to go bad, she processes it all in a food processor
mm-hmm.
and makes a paste with a little bit of olive oil, and then she uses a offset spatula
mm-hmm.
and smooshes it between two pieces of parchment paper, and then she freezes it, and when it's frozen and still pliable, she cuts it into squares, so whenever she wants a little bit of garlic paste, she just has a Ziploc full of these
little cubes.
They're like crackers.
Wafers.
Oh. Wafers. Yeah. Wafers, yeah.
Oh.
Because she rolls it out
okay.
and then she
okay,
cuts
got
them.
It. Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty ingenious.
It's a good idea.
That is good. That
mm-hmm.
is good.
Mm-hmm. I burnt a pan the other day pretty badly.
Oh, that could. Can we talk about that next time?
Yes, we
how
can.
How to clean
how to
trash
clean.
Pans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I had to look it up and I found some
make
really,
a note
good,
of that.
Really good information.
Make a note.
Scrubbing? No, thank you.
I'll There's be class historian.
Yeah. I did that this morning, too. Made
well,
my quesadilla
we're
and walked
just
away.
About out of time, and I just wanted to say thank you, listeners, for listening to us and for being part of our conversation. You can email us at stirringthepot@vashavoiceon. .org.
And you can do it live.
And just for clarification, we're not drinking.
No, we're just talking about it. It's just fun. Yeah. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks on the 19th. Bye-bye.
Bye.